Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Woo! Alrighty, so we got Film Rage's Jim.
Yo.
And we got Jeff and Mimi from Soulmates Podcast, Mystery Science Theater themed podcast. How are you two?
We are good.
Very well.
We were all looking forward to this. I was so fortunate to find any guests for this. There were even some who knew, clearly knew who he was, but they just didn't think they could talk about him because they're like, oh, I haven't seen 300 of his movies. I'm like, it's not required. That's virtually impossible.
Oh, there are that many.
Right.
I mean, we got just a fraction of them, and I felt lucky to find what we could. Most of them are Canadian based, and so there's no getting them.
Yeah, I was a lucky bastard.
Canadian,
so yes.
Canadian.
Trigger warning: Canadian jokes will commence. Occasional adult language does also commence.
And down.
For those listening, you know who you are. So, if you really, either way, you could also just leave us a positive or negative review on iTunes. That would help us very much. We'd like it very much. So. Here we are to talk about the one, the only Canadian actor, Michael Ironside, perhaps best known for his roles in movies such as Top Gun, Total Recall, and Starship Troopers, as well as TV shows like ER and Smallville, and numerous video game and cartoon appearances, including voicing Sam Fisher in the Tom Clancy Splinter Cell video games. So, how are you all?
But Canadians know him from his most famous movie of all times, which is Scanners.
Oh, yes. I'm a bastard. How did I not bring up Cronenberg?
The Cronenberg,
I mentioned all the Verhoeven, but I didn't mention the king of the Canadians, Cronenberg. Okay, yes. He
we
is
call
exploding.
That a canagasm. It's like you've
oh, it's
got
not Canuck.
Cronenberg and Ironside.
To be fair, I knew him best from Sequest, so.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah. Replacing him. Hobo? Yeah, last season.
Oh, sleep. I was diehard in my youth. Yeah.
And that's the beauty of this is, like, he has so many things that you have to have known him from in some capacity. I mean, even just working on those schlocky films for Glickenhaus, like McBain or Highlander 2, you know, so it's like.
Oh, man.
It's just so funny just seeing him just kind of open up. He's done a bunch of indie films and TV shows with his best friend, actor Curry Graham, who you guys might know from shows like Longmire and NYPD Blue. He's just like, and he had a funny thing, a story about how he went to the Total Recall remake opening night, and Curry Graham had done like a voice for it, and Curry was pissed because he had been deleted. And so they're both there just like Ironside is angry that his movie has been remade and it's just not all that fascinating, and Curry is pissed off because he's credited but his voice is deleted so he can't put it on his reel, and you're like, but man, what the fuck are we doing here?
Picking up chicks? I don't know.
Picking up? Oh, they're happily married. They don't need that. Yes, you're both first timers here, but I'll go in alphabetical order if that's okay. So, the duo here from Soulmates, what was your intro to just encountering Ironside on the big and small screen, or the video store for that matter.
Well, mine is a little bit of a tale. Mm. My first exposure to Michael Ironside was May 5th, 1984. We were in a little appliance store in Yukon, Idaho, when I saw the cover for the box of Scanners, which I found incredibly compelling.
There you go. So, okay.
That is such an amazing piece of horror poster art. That's just incredible. And we were purchasing, my family was purchasing our first color television, a 25-inch RCA, which is funny that we were in Yukon, Idaho, because Yukon, Idaho is a little tiny town about 10 miles outside of Idaho Falls, which is the second largest urban area in Southeast Idaho. And the only thing Yukon, Idaho has is an elementary school and no grocery store, no nothing else, and this appliance store. And then the following night, I was really excited that we had a color TV because I got to see V, the Final Battle.
I had rapid shirt of thanks for that during college. I was always trying to keep up with any of these Lance Henriksen, Tony Todd, or just Michael Madsen type actors, and just see how awesome they could be in any production of any kind. And, you know, they were Michael Caine before it was a thing, you know. So
I was 10 years old when the first V miniseries came out, and V, the Final Battle was coming along, and I'm like, you need to win it, man. Yeah. Totally. And on the screen splashed Ham Tyler, and I'm like, that's the dude.
He's a dude, all right.
Oh, yeah. So, Jim, when did you decide, hey, I'm going to keep an eye out for this actor?
So, I think I'm a little older than both of you, or all three of you, because I was lucky enough to see Rabid in theaters.
So, you were a Cronenberg fan.
Yes, I was already a Cronenberg fan and a Fangoria collector. So, knowing that Scanners was coming out, it was like Christmas every day for me. So I got to see that in theaters when it came out, and I just went, oh my God, I'm in love with this man. love him. And I've never stopped loving him. Yeah. Oh yeah. He's one of our collective, actually all three of us on our podcast. He's one of our collective favorite actors, and he's
happy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We have,
I still have some VHS tapes that are like noir detective or crime thrillers that I still haven't seen yet.
You're like, oh, you'll get to them someday.
Soon.
But maybe in hell. I don't know. One of those
two. In hell. Oh, man.
Well, he's definitely a movie that makes any movie that much better for him being in it.
Is and it his intimidating it's never bad. Factor or his voice or just
his bit presence. Of everything? His okay. presence.
Yeah.
Like, he can't be on screen without, we have a term for it on our podcast. He's mesmerizing. It's you see him in any movie and he'll just take over the screen. He doesn't, he can't help it. He's just too mesmerizing.
Even when the film is potato quality, you're just, you lock in on him. You're just like, yes.
I love you. Love that. Use that term potato. Cause I use it all the time.
There are some of those Canadian movies. No, it's probably a Reddit thing, sadly.
Well, and he was really good. I last year or and a half ago, I saw this miniseries he had been part of called God, what was it? The Final Chapter, and it was basically Canada's answer. It was Sons of Anarchy before it was a thing. It was like The Sopranos without constant language, and it was just interesting. It's like they're really doing a wonderful job. There's a lot of other people who you've seen on every other thing, you know, Canadian film like La Femme Nikita and X-Files, but it was just so cool to just see him play again, just a guy who's part of a motorcycle gang, but he's a businessman during the day, and at night, you know, he does whatever he wants and he makes no shames about it. And it's just, they did just another good just showcase of how someone like that would probably, you know, fit into the, you know, what's considered normal aspect of society, and then, you know, do all this, you know, socially unacceptable and violent behavior, you know. And it's just You see it everything from, oh, I'm going to be late to my birthday party. Well, cut this short. Oh, you know, I'm not telling you to cook and everything for the house, but I need you to. It's business.
He's definitely range. Well, how did you first see him?
Despite me being like one of the biggest Top Gun fans there is, I wasn't really aware of him from Top Gun, because mostly you just see him like this. I swear they cast him just for his eyes in that movie.
They probably did.
And I had watched V, NBC used to show that like almost once a year since it filmed to where I grew up.
Had to.
Yeah, pretty much. You've got to reveal that baby once a year. It's got to happen.
100%. Green alien
baby. But I knew him most from Sequest 2032. I came on with the first episode, I watched it all the way through. I was sad when Roy Scheider left, but I'm like, ah, who's this new guy? And I rewatched it a couple of days ago and I'm like, oh wait, the crew is having this exact experience. They're like, you've taken our captain. Who is this guy? And he immediately wins them over. So
he's amazing. And Roy Scheider in a movie together, and Michael Ironside crushes him.
Like, yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
You know your day is made in court when he's just crushing it. So just a few other movies that people might have seen him in that I totally recommend. He's trying to remember ones that I have actually seen. He's been in the slasher Visiting Hours with William Shatner, of all people.
Which is amazing.
Yes.
It totally is. American Nightmare. I think he's the main villain in Space Hunter, which is a movie I don't recommend, but...
I don't know.
Didn't he have like a weird, like, I don't know, skull, kind of like He-Man style or something?
He plays the big bad Overdog, and he's in these giant prostheses. And really, you only see him like the last 30 minutes of the movie, but there is something to that movie worth watching. It's supposed to be a Star Wars ripoff, but it's got a young Ernie Hudson in it, Molly Ringwald, depending on how you feel about her. Just gigantic sets. Yeah, it's a crazy movie. I can't believe that they actually made it.
I can't believe that it was a sci-fi movie that I didn't hear about.
I'm amazed by that, too. I
practically lived in a video store.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I never saw it at any store, and it was just so weird. I was like, you would think it would be at some kind of store, but yeah.
Yeah.
I can't believe we haven't talked about Turbo Kid.
Yes. It was one that's like a homage film. Yeah. I was just trying to go in some kind of order, but yeah, that's fine. Let's talk about
jump to Turbo Kid.
Mom, we got to go straight to the classics.
Well, I mean, what is a classic? I mean, there's Nowhere to Hide, where he plays a rare good guy helping someone not get stalked, or Prom Night 2, a classic, Extreme Prejudice, yes. You know?
How do you miss Destiny to Order?
When did that come out?
Oh, my God.
You don't know about Destiny to Order?
Okay, 1989, Destiny to Order. Common trope of the 80s, a story about from a writer's point of view and his characters come alive. Same thing happens in this, but he's writing a noir.
Is this on DVD anywhere?
We watched it on streaming.
Yeah,
it's free on Roku, but I don't remember what platform we watched.
Can't find it anywhere. It was
it's well worth
sounds
it.
Sounds amazing.
He plays a the head of a biker.
Okay. Let me describe this. He is the head of a biker gang in a leather biker jacket, a zipper-sleeved, and the zippers are undone, zipper-sleeved, chrome-studded biker jacket, who is into Wagner and philosophy.
Oh, wow.
And he just
drugs chomp, to kids on the street.
Chomps through the scenery. No, he's the bad guy. He gets he gets a hold of the floppy disk that has the book on it and starts rewriting it.
Wow. So he's like Pinhead, but if he were to rewrite your nightmares rule book.
Kind of, and he's diabolical.
Oh.
But the best is this this line he has, you would never let me listen to Wagner. You'd never let me talk about Nietzsche. You'd
or
never
Jung.
Or Jung. Or eat quiche. I love fucking quiche.
Oh my god. So, now I gotta
see
this.
It's amazing. Oh, and he has the best death in it. I won't spoil it for you.
Oh,
and then it's shocking and original and it blows your mind.
And this was pre-American Pie, right? Because
it has to be 89, so yeah.
If he's fucking quiche, is that kind of what influenced American Pie?
Not that I'm kind of wondering. Fucking.
Oh, right.
Oh boy. Oh dear. Oh, that's great. I will check that out. Some other stuff he's done is Hostile Takeover, Watchers, totally recommend, Mindfield, Chain Dance.
We couldn't get a hold of that one. We were dying too.
Where did I see that? I think it was on Rapid Share, but that's closed down. Killer Image, I don't recommend, but Neon City is pretty wild. It's like
Neon City. Neon City was the kind of movie that I wanted to see as a kid.
Yeah, it was filmed down south of us by
right. Just another one of those video store things that just they make it dirt cheap in like Louisiana or Utah, and then it looks good. Night Trap, Free Willy, Fatherhood with Patrick Swayze.
He's been in some pretty big. Like it's interesting, like how much he works as we've kind of talked. That
you've been played a good guy.
Like, some of the biggest budgets, and then the next thing he's in this total independent movie that costs $5.
And anyone can call from Canada, and he runs back up there to do a TV movie, and you're like, "You were just in Top Gun. You were just in Total Recall. What?
Just in these,
I know, right? It's like, but it's kind of like I think that's a little bit of a Canadian thing.
Oh yeah, I think so. And much like many actors who just work nonstop, he seems to just get a giant career boost in by doing 5 to 6 movies in both 94 and 95. It's insane. Yeah. He does an animation voiceover. He's in this Don the Dragon Wilson karate movie as the captain. He's the really crooked cop in the true crime movie The Glass Shield, which is really good. And then he's in just schlock like The Probable Cause or The Next Karate Kid. And
well, he seems to have not focused on trying to achieve that major stardom. And I think I'm just guessing here, but from one of his interviews with Miskatonic Institute, he was doing an interview back in 2018. And he talks about taking roles that he really enjoys. He really kind of feels like he can put something into. And I feel like part of his career path is that he is just fiercely Canadian.
Actually Canadian, and he's written and directed a few different times. The Arrangement was a fun witness protection movie.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Chain Dance, that's another one that he
Chain Dance, in. Yes. Yeah. The Nuremberg miniseries. And I mean, he's like the best part. He's a Walker, Texas Ranger of all shows. So it's just like, he stars in all these other various productions. And I think the reason you can remember even any of his guest spots on like say something like the A-Team or even the newer Outer Limits is that he really makes great use of any kind of guest spot role. I mean, and I know many DC comic people remember him as the voice of Darkseid or even something silly like Andromeda. So it's just like, when he comes into a role, I think I don't know if he acts like it's his final, day to eat or what, but you see motivation. And I've even been surprised on other shows like Stargate or Criminal Minds where he wasn't even playing a bad guy for once, and it's like that's great,
it's always kind of a surprise to see him not playing a bad guy
because he just did it so well for so long. It's like what
it shows
there
are
even
range.
There are even roles that he's had that I knew about, but I didn't know it was him. Like in Ray Bradbury Theater, he's doing The Fruit at the Bottom of the Bowl. And you'd heard about that episode where the guy goes manic, he can't get the fingerprints off. And
can't do it.
I knew about that. And I watched it the other night. I'm like, holy shit, this is him.
Right. Of all people. And even his, what was the role? There's a, even in just silly stuff like Major Payne or Terminator Salvation, where he's technically a good guy, but he's, where office politics, he's still some kind of opposing force. It's interesting seeing him in those because it's like basically he's open to just, again, just choose scenery without not giving anyone a moment to shine in their own right. Like, he's definitely an ensemble guy, and I think that's why people like working with him. I even compare him to even just, he can do an Adam West or Leslie Nielsen, or much like Ernie Hudson at times, where he can say something that's, you know, serious but meant to be funny, you know, like, especially if you see his Community guest spot is like, so he can totally do that with, and give it the right nuance and be in on the joke. And it's like, that's rare, because not everyone can pull that off, you know?
But he can always bring that air of menace.
Total menace. Yeah. And I feel like, and you see him in interviews and he's just always just guffawing, or it's like, you're just afraid at first, because you just almost, you know, you would get a sense that he was a method actor, and it's like, oh, but he's not the kind who just, you know, creeps everyone out. You know? he just talks in the character voice, you know, in between takes. Mm-hmm.
I was lucky enough to meet him in person.
Oh, really?
A couple years ago.
Yeah.
Convention?
He came to a film festival in town. I live in a city called Calgary here in Alberta, Canada. And
You're kind of in the same realm as us.
Yeah. We're not too far off. He was just like the nicest guy. I went and saw his film, and then we were just kind of, you know, chilling at the theater, because we pretty much live at the theater during festival season. And, you know, he was with wasn't really an entourage, about two or three people, and they're just walking back to the car park. And, you know, there's some kind of rules to the car park to get in after hours. And we're just walking back, and we're kind of pacing together. And a few of my friends are kind of like freaking out. It's like, that's him. And I just walked up to him. I said, hey, I really liked your movie. And he was just like, he just kind of looked at me like, first off, who are you? And then the second thing, it was just like, he's like, yeah, thanks a lot. And he started talking to me a little bit. And then when we showed him how to get into the car park, he was like, oh, that's so great. Let me open the door for you. And just like, what is, can I hug you right now?
A lot of them can be freaked out, because they just don't know if, you know, someone's going to say something weird or, you know, rude to him. So it's like, how do you react? So I'm sure he's just like, okay, great. That he just was reading into is like, okay, he's not gonna ask me something perverted or weird.
He's not a stalker, and he's not, it's like, and I'm just like, whatever, he's just a dude. Like, I've met a lot of people, and
he's so many
really, yeah, just what you know, not that I've met a million famous people, but it's like, I have a belief that everyone's just a person, so it doesn't matter who it is. It could be my most favorite actor or director of all time, like, whatever.
Right. Regardless of what we've heard about him, you know, it's like, was it just them arguing with the opinionated director or the makeup person being rude to him? You know, you don't know until you know. So, yeah. I mean,
well, what year was it that it was right after, right after Extreme Prejudice, he got approached by Paul Verhoeven to do,
Robocop.
Oh, did he now? Okay.
Yeah, and he had to turn it down because he was a little tired of working, and Paul Verhoeven got him to come in and do a set thing where they put some of the armor on him, and what did you call it? It's not really. Anyway, the person fitting him was like, he looked like a goddamn Sherman tank. And so
he's pretty built.
He was like, I think for everyone's benefit, I think I got a pass on this one. But they kept it so hush hush. He got kind of this rumored reputation as being difficult to work with. I mean, Paul Verhoeven wouldn't work with him. So he had this weird reputation in Hollywood for 5 years or so. And then
we were then versus now, where
exactly,
you know, we can now go to Twitter and debunk something saying, hey man, TMZ is full of it.
And then when Starship Troopers came out, that kind of absolved everything. So
Total Recall too.
Oh, sorry, Total Recall.
Right. Well,
and, about that one.
It helped that he was doing those back and back and forth between the same place in Mexico City with Highlander too. So yeah, it's just like, yeah, you do one good movie and one bad movie, both in the same, you know, country.
I forgot about Highlander too.
Highlander 2 could have been good.
Oh, Well, that's just it. It's fast. It's just one of those kind of like terrible. The Room where it's just, it's fascinating to see how just some movies, you know, you can salvage, like there's different versions of, oh, you know, Heaven's Gate or Justice League. But yeah, with that one, there's like five versions and you're just like, man, it just wasn't meant to be. And as
this
much
was
as
my first time happens. Watching Highlander 2. I had never seen it before.
Really?
And okay. I had a really good friend who told me, oh, Highlander 2, they made him aliens and they fucked it all up. And now I watched Highlander 2 and I'm looking at it, I'm like, the aliens part was the part you didn't like?
What's the part?
Well, and what's so weird is it was meant to be part of it. Right. It was meant to be in the first movie, and it, like you say, that's like the most minuscule issue. Like, the issue is just that it doesn't make sense. And so
it looks like they shot it on the leftover sets of the Batman movie.
Yeah.
As something, yeah. And just the fact that it doesn't know if it wants to be like a cyberpunk apocalyptic movie or just another space, you know, sci-fi epic. It's just very drawn out. And you can't blame anyone for just scratching their head, just saying, I don't know what we did, you know?
Yeah. Although he is the best part of it, again.
He's just absolutely overkilled with his dreadlocks. And he's dedicated his voices to other just, you know, fun cartoons that you can show the kids, as well as video games for the older guys like Time Shift and Command & Conquer. And so it's just like, yeah, he's done all sorts of movies. And, you know, if he phoned it in, I can't ever tell. He's just really good at just playing, doing what he's being supposed to do. And I think because he's in that moment, you know, you're never really going to know unless you ask him, hey, did you really like doing that movie or not liking that movie? But yeah, any video store or just wacky TV movie, I've always dug with him because he really is more versatile than I think people give him credit for. It's just, we're just so used to the grim voice. So we're not sure what we're going to get.
Well, we it just.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, I was just going to say, he just has so much range to his voice, right? And it's
different layers.
He
can play injured. He can play confused. He can play commanding. And then, I mean, and like you say, I mean, there's just so many layers to his various movies and shows. And he's even played dads or coaches and or scientists, as opposed to just always the, you know, crooked executive or super
the motorcycle rider,
yeah, or motorcyclist, or just super villain.
That comes into the point villain. I was going to make. We just watched Knuckleball.
Oh, yeah,
and the transition he makes in just one scene with pretty much just his voice and eyes from this very menacing sort of
stranger figure,
stranger grandfather, to something somebody rather caring and paternal in just a moment. It's really nice to see somebody be able to do that mm-hmm. in just one little scene.
And then he spends the rest of the movie as an alternative version of himself that's very colored by the bad guys' imagination. I mean, it's not really a memory.
And as the shadow or the imagination, he's less gruff.
Yeah.
Mm, okay, that's very appealing, and I'm sure that had to be some kind of appeal.
Also, Knuckleball has the kid from Turbo Kid as the killer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, and he's creepy.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
So you think Monroe Chambers, his career is going to take off even more?
Well, he actually suggested that Monroe Chambers take the role in Knuckleball.
Nice.
Because he's like, the actor was talking about how he'd done all these movies where he was kind of this like naive, winsome kid. And he's like, you need to break out of that.
Nice.
Do something that's going to break that, and then they'll see you differently.
Hmm. Shit, this is great. I gotta see this. And
yeah,
he did that. They apparently worked on another movie called Helmington Together. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's not as well reviewed as your Knuckleball, but These both sound very good, and that's good because I'm doing a series of psycho thrillers and home invasion themed, you know, multi reviews. So I gotta
check. Disqualifies.
I'm just surprised, like, how much he's been in the last while, and then you look at his stuff that's coming up in the next few years. It's like he's got stuff in the can, or it's completed, and post production has so much stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, so
even
much
if
stuff.
It's just one that you think can't possibly be good, you're just like, I still might give it a rent on Prime or a Redbox rental on a less, you know, busy day, just because you just can't help but be curious, as opposed to just other people like, you know, Eric Roberts, where you're just like, okay, good actor, but there's no fucking way this is good. You know, just look at the cover. You know? And so
it's almost just, like, if he's in it, you know, it's not going to be good. It's like, oh, Eric Roberts picked it.
Right. Yeah, won't be
good. Michael Ironside, you know, there's at least one character you're going to love in this movie. Movies like Extraterrestrial and Lake Placid 3. He's a joy. Everyone else can go to hell, but
hey, it's like a seal of approval. How good is this movie? Michael Ironside's in it. Oh, it's at least Michael Ironside.
Yeah.
Right.
It's its own rating. It's like, is this good, bad, terrible? What is it? It's Michael Ironside.
I'm even that way with Madsen or Hendrickson and Todd, which is more than I can say for, say, Stephen Bauer, Byling, or some other person who's just known for being an asshole on set, or, you know, Eric Estrada, Tara Reid. You know, you know that those guys have, you know, skeletons in their closets, you know, before you even watch the movie. And it's like, yeah, I mean, he's earned it. He has so much stuff we love, so many trashy movies that we also love, and just so many memorable roles. And like I say, the range helps. So because he just showed what we could do, he could do so many so early. I mean, you know, you really can't lose.
Well, and he does a lot of work, because I think he gets a lot of work, because I think he is easy to work with. And I don't want to, you know, throw out that Canadian niceness, because I don't think that's it. I think it's more of the blue collar work ethic of, you go, you do the job, you don't cause drama, and you get the product done.
Totally. Put it this is it. So very much so. He treated it like a business without, you know, making it on fun, or just like a not so fun place to play pretend.
Well, and I think the fact that he's a scriptwriter in and of himself, I think he has an appreciation for the craft that he's like, we don't have time for this. We need to make this movie. Come on.
Yeah. But it's interesting, what, like, I'm just trying to think, as you look through his list, of what was his last, like, he's been in some huge blockbusters. What was his last real big blockbuster? Other than, like, you don't count TV shows and things like that, may have been popular, but an actual movie that you were like, okay, this made over $100 million.
God. It's gotta be Starship Troopers or Terminator Salvation. I mean,
oh, I think Terminator flopped. So yeah, probably Starship.
I love that Terminator.
I have fun with it, especially his scenes. He gets more scenes in the extended cut where he just does more of a, and I know he said he did like, we already covered Christian Bale on here, but he apparently did like working with him also on The Machinist, where he plays his boss. He's like, hey, Jerry, why are you acting weird? You know, it's just so cool to see him again. Yeah. In a place where, again, he's not, you know, creeping everyone out, and he's just like, what's going on?
I actually don't remember, but he looks like he was in X-Men First Class. So I think that
it's a blink and you miss it moment, where he's just playing one of the generals on the ship going, what do you see there?
And he even gets a name.
Yeah, just general. Yeah. And just like James Remar and Ray Wise, I was just like, why are they in this? Because regardless of a movie's quality, I just don't like it when someone just shows up and they just don't do anything in it. But I get it, you know, it's just inevitable. Sometimes someone just wants to work with someone, but they run out of time, or the director of the episode screws up, or, you know, it is what it is. So,
well, if I was Matthew Vaughn, I would just say, look, I'm in love with Michael Ironside. Can I just have him for like 5 minutes?
He could be an alter universe of Professor X. Out of my mind.
Who's the character who could control gravity? Harry.
Oh, from the Lord's Cardinal?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I can't remember his actual name. He's the Black Rook.
Didn't you go as him for Halloween 1 year?
But I don't know his name.
Oh, okay.
That's great. That's awesome.
There are very few superhero costume choices for a portly dude.
And I still would like, I've always joked, much like people were joking how if they do a live action version of Archer, just have the cast play themselves and then have John Hamm with H. John Benjamin dubbing him. I was kind of that way. I'm like, whoever they get for the delayed Splinter Cell movie, just have Michael Ironside still voicing Sam Fisher, but some other, you know, very fit, you know, person who's not in his 50s playing Sam, you know.
I love that.
I remember back in the day,
I want to do a cosplay of him still.
Back in the day, we were talking about them doing the original X-Men movie, mm-hmm. and I'm like, they should have Michael Ironside play Wolverine.
I think he's a little too tall, though. They should have had actually somebody that was 4 feet tall.
Well, I mean, it's not like Hugh Jackman is a.
No, he's not either.
In fact, there's one scene where they're on Liberty Island and they're all jumping a wall, and it's very apparent that Hugh Jackman is the tallest member of the cast.
Yeah,
and like, well, that's Wolverine.
They didn't follow that all the way through, right? No. Otherwise, it probably would have been Tom Cruise. That's the only actor short enough to play the real role.
But then they couldn't actually show that because it's in all of his contracts.
You could do some Peter Jackson type
force perspective
music era, and have him play Puck on Alpha Flight.
There you go. Why are you guys not casting movies?
Well played.
Actually, he's a bit too scary to play Puck.
Yeah.
Sorry. let's see. Which ones are you dying to talk about, Jeff?
Well, obviously, the wonderful indie darling Chicago Cab. That's not even worth mentioning on this because he's in like one scene.
That's true.
But it is interesting how, for a man of his range, he was just able to be in so many just like multi-anthology kind of movies and shows. I mean, even Masters of Horror, even this other, I think, Crime and Murder in Suburbia, I think, was one where he played the abusive dad. So it was interesting just seeing how he just has certain different angles to his different roles, where it's just like, hey, you never know what you're getting, you know, until, again, you just see it. And I'm sure you always get a sense that he loves interacting with the cast and crew. Just like, hey, would you want me to do it this way? You want me to give it more volume? You want me to add more subtleties, like just looking around nervously with my eyes.
I wonder where he lives now.
I think he's still in Toronto, I think. Or
is he?
Yeah, he sold his LA home back in like 2016 or something.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that. But that would make sense. I guess he was just getting less offers there, and he's, you know,
part of and he's such a proud Canadian, he's never gotten U.S. citizenship.
Oh, okay.
Like, I will never.
He says, I've got my work visa.
Yep.
That's all I need.
Right.
Interesting.
What else do you need? You know, and yeah, if he were to die tomorrow, I would just be like, hey, what a damn cool career. What a bunch of cool personas to play. And can't say that he, you know, again, much like many of these other people we mentioned, is like most of his stuff, you know, he's just has so much each year to where it's like there's something for everybody. If you're watching the lowest of the lowest common denominator movie, you're going to see him eventually. If you're seeing, again, a popular TV show, he's going to eventually guest spot as a, you know, again, someone's dad or a murder suspect of the week, you know.
A general.
Or a captain.
Crazy
gun-toting American.
Yeah,
that
he
also
does that well.
Right. Some other, and I mean, you mentioned blue collar. He does definitely do a lot of those just still mill kind of guys who are, because yeah, he kind of came from that way of life. And so I think everyone somehow saw he could totally recreate it on screen. There's even the whole, again, like Jim was mentioning earlier, just the whole, again, just when he does various voiceovers, you look at his Transformers voiceovers, you're not getting the exact same kind of, you know, creative vibe that you get also from his, you know, DC Comics type, you know, stuff. So it's like, I think, like you've all have perfectly illustrated, he put a price tag on it, and he also just knew is like, an actor is a brand, you know, here's my brand with my voice, with my on-screen persona, you know, and I think, like you say, because he diminished those rumors of him being difficult to work with following RoboCop, I think everyone just, you know, wasn't reluctant to cast him at all or anything, you know?
He's one hell of a guy. He mentioned in an interview I saw that he's had two scares with cancer himself, and his wife has had a scare with cancer lately.
Oh, really?
And that's why he gained all the weight he has, because he had thyroid cancer. Mm. And when the doctor called and told him he was going to live, he's like, well, damn it, now I got to lose all this weight. So, but he mentioned that
in that
now,
voice, that would be great.
It's kind of funny how Canadian he sounds in interviews.
He's very Canadian. But he
especially at conventions. Yeah.
Exactly. He mentioned how now that he's had these cancer scares, now he kind of feels like every role just might be his last. And so he's being very, very choosy about what he gets. He's
one way to live. Yeah. And
exactly.
It helps that in any of these low budget sci-fi horror movies he's done, he's always had just literally like 2 days worth of work. And that's pretty much a win-win. You can be on the cover without affecting the movie or just looking like, you know, a fool. And I think,
but 2 days of worth of work is still 2 days of work.
And if the character you hand in is something you're proud of, which I don't think he's ever, other than McBain, I don't think there's anything he's ever not been proud of.
Yeah, like then, he didn't like the script for Highlander 2, but he didn't. He still added something to the character. So, I mean, that's just it. I mean, the last thing you can ask, I mean, even if you're playing against an actor who's not good, you know, the last thing you need to do is just, you know, sometimes great actors, again, convince the ones who are lacking or impossible to work with directors to just finally just, again, burst through their ego and say, you know what? I want to act you in this scene, be up on your level, you know, and, or I'm going to start asking you for notes since you're speaking my language. So, you know, you never know really until, again, it happens. And I think with, and again, you guys have all pretty much illustrated, he's kept everyone's number handy and made great friends and just, again, just been polite at any public area. I just found it so funny how there's like different bits of trivia years ago. I would read how he would often be stopped randomly by cops just because they're like, you look like an intimidating person. You look like someone up to no good. And it's like, I'm just minding my business.
Got resting bastard face, I guess, maybe.
Pretty much.
Resting bastard face. Will that be on his tombstone? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Resting bastard face. Scanning recall bastard face.
I can see the pullover on that. Do you know why we pulled you over tonight? No, I do not. I don't either, sir. I'm going to go back to my car. Sorry.
Oh, man. And he's also just been fortunate to just be on various like period pieces. Like The Alienist was great. He got to play one of those like politicians, you know, in those very divided society. And I just couldn't help myself. I just started talking to my sister, Michael Ironside. And my impression of him is just like, yes, I know who he is. He's not the star.
I just love that what he's got, some of the films that he has coming up, like without even knowing what the movie's about. Super Dicks. Like, it's like, okay, I'm like,
he knows how to pick the names, man. Yeah.
Who else would you put in? Like, I'm in Super Dicks or The Fight Machine.
I've got to see The Fight Machine.
I know.
The Fighting Machine. Yeah.
What if The Fight Machine is the sequel to The Killing Machine?
Oh, there you go. a reunion of karate kickboxer direct-to-video B-movie stars, and he's one of them. There you go. Nice. I'd watch it. But yeah, so you guys have pretty much made that come across screen as like you believe his presence, whatever he's portraying, even and his voices again have just numerous, not just volumes, but just layers. So you can pick out what voice. It's going to be very hard, pretty much impossible to find a performance that you just did not like, even in just the most dire movie. So yeah, it's pretty much just a win. I mean, compared to others where it just looks like, you know, they were filmed in their house, you know, against a green screen on Zoom, you know, you never get that. Oh, just so rushed. Why did they bother? You know?
So true.
Great. Great. Were you surprised that you haven't seen him in, or what movie that you mentioned, but you forgot he's in or still need to see? Seen a good chunk of his TV movies and
Chain Dance is the one I've been chasing. Not even on like
one
Eastern European movies. Sites can I find it. It's
maybe Rareless you could find it.
I found it on Laserdisc, but we wouldn't have it in time for the interview, and I'm like, oh, does our machine still work?
I'm not sure our Laserdisc player still works.
I don't know. But still, I'd be like, I have
at least you got it when the time arrives, and it's impossible, you know. When you got over 100 roles, you're gonna have some that just fall through the cracks. He's got this one movie is like called One of Our Own, which sounds like an episode of JAG or NCIS. I can't find it anywhere, but I'm like, hey, that's interesting. Seeing him play a colonel trying to find who caused a mishap at a military base. What insider did that? I'm like, that's cool, but. Yeah, where can I find that? I don't think it's ever been released outside of TV. So
that's one of those things you think about, that why is there not a better database with every movie ever made? Like, it's just, it's frustrating sometimes.
It's like the market is keeping up. IMDb is only so good. Sorry, go ahead.
The best thing you can hope for is that someone remembers it from their youth and throws it on YouTube and no one cares that it's up there.
Yeah,
I think YouTube has been helping, and fortunately a lot of the new streaming site launches have been realizing we got to play ball. So, and they're pretty much got the same mentality that the movie channels had, where they started deals with movie companies and decided to air anything in their, you know, database. But I think it is also, yes, getting to that point where it's like, let's do some outreach. And some of the companies, in all fairness, have been doing the same Lionsgate or Sony approach, where just buy older movies and even outdated cartoons that have a big cult fan base, you know, read the forums, see what someone would actually pay, you know, $40, you know, to buy a set of, you know.
I just
found, a lot of those.
Oh, go ahead, Jeff.
Just a lot of those 80s and early 90s things and 70s productions. I don't think a lot of them have been digitized, or if they can even be found, because some of these things were shot on tape, and depending on the budget and the studio, some of them, they reuse the tapes to record other things.
Yeah,
that's what happened to quite a bit of the Doctor Who.
Yeah, it was a BBC, PBS thing, just only meant to air once or twice. And then, like you say, yeah, it's just they didn't think there was a fan base for it, which is just unthinkable because, you know, you can't expect every programmer or viewer to record everything that's ever aired.
Yeah. That's too bad.
I know. There are some of them. I mean, I still go to some of those sites where it's like they third-party sellers, and it's like it may not be legal, but no one's releasing it anytime soon. So that's just what you got.
There's one I've been. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
I was just going to say. I just found Just Watch like not that recently. Someone said, "Hey, if you're trying to find stuff, at least in Canada, we have a tougher time to find things that aren't Canadian."
You're CBC money.
Yeah, sir, CBC.
Oh my god.
Don't get me started on CBC money.
That's great. Oh man. And it is cool to also just again have an actor who you can show some of his movies to any audience. It's not just restricted, like only kids' movies or only R-rated movies. So it's like that's cool too. That works in his favor.
Yeah, other than the occasional F-bomb, his roles are generally kind of wholesome. I mean, totally. Scanners is the big...
Yeah, so the R-rated crowd can watch Scanners or Total Recall. Yeah. The PG-13 crowd can watch Terminator or Major Pain. And the PG crowd can watch any of his cartoon shows.
Your grandma can watch A Passion for Murder.
Yeah.
Right, A Passion for Murder. Or what's the other one? Or they can watch Free Willy together while you're at work. So yeah, there you go. you know what I'm saying?
Free Willy? Is that what you're saying?
They probably gave Free Willy to the role. Well, did we know
he wasn't the bad guy in Free Willy?
Yeah.
Although you keep thinking he is, but yeah, it's funny. Just his look that he gives. Oh. Yeah.
Yes. Like, I've never seen Free Willy. Who's the bad guy? Oh, the orca. Yeah.
But it was a good parallel. It'd be funny if it was set in the same universe as Sequest. See? I'm the good guy. I see.
Or the Free Willy that escaped became the movie Orca.
I can see that happening.
Yep. Oh, my.
And they made a documentary called Blackfish.
Oh, man. There you go. Huh? I would see that. I would see him in anything. I would see him in a true crime movie about a guy who tried to apprehend someone he believes is D.B. Cooper. I would see him. I would see him in a Seven knockoff film. I would see him play a Starfleet captain on track. I'd see him play anything really at this point.
I'm trying to think of a type of role that he hasn't done. I mean, space captain, sea captain, regular maybe, boat captain.
He could play a marijuana growing uncle, maybe.
There's a lot of captaining.
Like captain. How would he even say that? That's captain to you, sir. Do you get it? I'm Michael Ironside.
Now, we've been living with this collective mythos that he has said the line from Starship Troopers, I have one rule, everyone fights, no one quits, in multiple projects. And then we started doing this. We have not found it anywhere else.
I think it's just a myth because everyone's seen the movie 19 dozen times, so therefore it happened more than actually happened. But that would be cool to know if someone has ripped off any line that he said or referenced in some way. But it seems like it only kind of went as far as like the video games where people loved his material. And so they just said, well, I want to hear that voice, you know, just read the phone book. So he might as well be in my game that I'm programming.
Nice. I think our best chance is Sequest, that he might have said it on that.
He might have. He has to at some point.
He might have said it on V, but I swear
it's the second time. That was before he was a star. So
maybe Top Gun? Did he say that?
No.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be the best Easter egg of all times, though, is have an actor who's been in as many movies as him. Like, it's in my contract. I have to say this one line. And then everybody's going to look for... I mean, that would draw people to the movie just for that, right? Like,
what is he going to say?
It's so weird. He has such a huge fan base, and yet it never got as big as, like, Keanu Reeves has to say, well, or Sam Jackson has to say the F word a certain way. Yeah. So it does... It is kind of just puzzling. You're like, so where is his fan base exactly? It just seems to just be in people who just... he's just one of the few character actors who just broke through the cracks, and everyone's like, yeah, I know him some way, some capacity, and he's good. he gets no bullshit or smack talking from me.
Yeah, it's like, is there anybody that doesn't like Michael
Ironside? That's just so weird. I've seen people say, I don't like Madsen, or Henderson creeps me out, or I hate Roberts, he's a shit actor. I've never seen anyone say, you know, Ironside is always just generic home villain, or I hate his voice. I've never seen any of that. So yeah, I think he's just a rarity. He's been one of the few who
all I can think of are people that missed the point with Starship Troopers and watched something else
that's pretty much it. Any satire or genre movie like Scanners or Total Recall, that's as close as I've gotten. I've never seen any of those out of all those free movies, I've never seen anyone else say, oh, he phoned it in, or that movie sucked because he was in it, or he couldn't rescue this movie. Well, no, he kind of rescued it because it made you didn't want to watch it enough. But yeah,
it's like the only someone who's, I don't know, let's just say they're 24 the only movie they saw him in was Terminator Salvation. It's like,
yeah.
That would be wild because, yeah, he's just been for the cracks. At, like, even anyone who hasn't seen him, they have to know some capacity they have seen him.
Yeah.
Unless they've just really been under a rock all these years. But, yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, I've been, when I talk to people about what we've been doing this past month, watching all the Michael Ironside movies, they're like, who? And I'm like, oh, he was in Top Gun. He's the guy from Starship Troopers, Lieutenant. Oh, that guy. Yeah, I know that guy. But you have to lead them to it.
If the majority you don't say people. Scanners or Starship or Recall, yeah. You pretty much got to just back it up with, you remember Darkseid on Justice League? You remember video games?
What killed me was all the blank looks when I'd say he was the bad guy in Total Recall. And they're like,
which one?
I don't remember that movie.
Really? They gave you that part? They just remember Arnold's and the makeup and Sharon Stone, I guess.
All they remember is the three boobs.
Oh, well, yes.
The three for real? Boobs.
Well, and Tinkerbell. I mean.
I mean, that was a good. Verhoeven's, he's so good.
I mean, he's a satirical artist in himself. He was fun to cover because pretty much everyone was just going on his American movies, and I was just summing up all his German movies I had squeezed in. I'm like, those are great movies too. But unless you want to shell out $40 for the Criterion Collection, chances are you will not have seen them. The closest you might get is Flesh and Blood with Rutger Hauer and Jennifer Jason Leigh because it comes on MGM HD, but that's it. And it's just interesting how certain people's work. It's pretty much just, you just can't find it unless you taped it or have a third party site or just do some other shuffling through eBay and get a region free player. So fortunately, like you guys said, any movies that we just didn't get to, like we're going to get to them eventually, but it might be 10 years from now. Or if it pops up again, yeah, on Daily Motion or YouTube. So yeah, I mean, we did squeeze in, we did not regret.
You know who, if you think of, like, if you think of any other actor, like, if you have to say to yourself, okay, what other actor do you know that could be a Michael Ironside? Like, you know, they could be necessarily interchanged. I was thinking about that before the show, and I'm thinking the only person that I think could possibly, but not necessarily, would be James Remar.
Oh, there you go. And Remar is definitely an example of a guy who, you know, he was in a bunch of Walter Hill movies and then just a bunch of different TV shows and, you know, everything in between. You either, you know, was either an independent movie or direct-to-video release. But yeah, it's the same kind of similar pattern. Just take what you can chew and just always stand out. And yeah, I can't think of any time where Ironside looked like he just did not absolutely want to be there, or you heard a rumor of how he wanted to get out of his contract or fire his agent. I can't even think of any. I mean, you mentioned Space Hunter. I can't think of any role where he has a bunch of scarred or mass type makeup where he just looks like he does not want to, you know, exist in a scene. And who knows, maybe that was an unwritten rule, just cast me in anything, just as long as it doesn't require makeup. Maybe that helped, you know.
Well, most of those roles seem to be earlier on in his career. I mean, when it came to...
Yeah, and maybe being Canadian helped too. People had to fly him out. And so maybe, who knows, maybe that worked in his favor. He never got contractually obligated to play a... I mean, even though he's in Prom Night 2, he's not the killer. He never was bound by a franchise where he's like, you must return indefinitely for these sequels that may or may not be good, you know?
Although I wish we'd gotten to see him in RoboCop. I mean, I know
if anything,
Peter Weller is good.
Programmer or one of the executives, if anything.
Well, why not replace Ferrer with him?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
he would have been great in Ferrer's role.
That'd be funny. Blowing dope off hooker's tits. That'd be funny.
He loves to play asshole middle management. So
yeah.
Yeah, I haven't even seen him play too many sleaze or just deliberate douchebags, just more guys like, oh, you know, like just Wall Street types. Oh, you're not going to catch me, are you?
He loves to come kill things for the government.
Oh yeah, yes. Especially in Killer Image. Yeah. What the hell was that movie?
I think the closest thing to like a sleaze or drug dealer type, I think, was Extreme Prejudice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And
but even then he's special forces.
Well, but like 45 right. minutes of his scenes got cut out.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. He was in, let's see. They came back with the initial cut and they're like, it's the Michael Ironside movie guest starring Nick Nolte. So we have to cut about 45 minutes of scenes.
That's garbage.
And there's a whole character that's cut out. The guy who plays Garrick on DS9 and the killer on Dirty Harry.
Yeah, Andrew Robinson and Clancy Brown are in there. So yeah,
he was his partner and he really humanized the Michael Ironside character, but they had to lose all of his scenes, just cut him out completely in order to make the run. And the balance of the movie.
It's such
right.
a shame that Walter Hill has not been able to do too many special editions or director's cuts of his films either. We talked about him, and we were just like, does he think it's too much trouble, or does he just think, hey, just move on? I know who my true fans are, you know? And I am also wondering why he never reunited with him in some capacity. It seemed like for a while he was, I mean, you mentioned Remar, he would use him every chance he got. And it seems like, I know he's reuniting with William Dafoe, so it's a Streets of Fire kind of reunion for whatever he's got coming up next. So.
I think he did another couple of movies with Powers Booth as well.
Yeah, Booth was always a regular, and yes, the Deadwood pilot counts, but yeah, he just, it seems like certain people just instantly get called and you don't know how much of it is producers saying, oh, too expensive or too, no, I got a better person in mind and you got to use a mandatory, yada, yada. So, yeah, but yeah, I guess you can say he's had a solid agent, Ironside, and I mean, how awesome that you share a surname with the title character of a Private Eye show. But yeah, what does Ironside even mean? Does that just mean he has a lot of high calcium vitamin levels? What made of iron? Is he the real Iron Man?
Is it a reference to the proto-submarine?
I don't know. There you go. Yeah, it's the Sequest nickname before Sequest existed. It's in or maybe it's like it's purgatory. It's in between your good and your dark side.
It's your iron side.
That's right.
Maybe that's why you played dark side. Yeah. Iron side equals dark side. There you go.
I love that story where they brought him back after the first miniseries of V. How did it go? They wanted to put Ham Tyler in a wheelchair. And he's like,
what?
You can't put me in a wheelchair. My name is Ironside.
Oh, that's fucking amazing. That's awesome. And do you think that role gave him some of his good guy roles, like in Troopers and Sequest, you think?
Oh, certainly.
Because he's playing a freedom fighter equivalent, trying to stop the body snatcher type aliens. And
well, we were thinking about Ham Tyler's character. He doesn't change that much as a character, but the other people change towards him.
Maybe it got him a Splinter Cell role because he's doing exactly that. He's rappelling down and killing people with silence pistols. Oh man,
I don't know. I think we were ready for a Ham Tyler type character.
That's what the show needed.
Definitely a character of the 80s. Well, and the show did need that because you've got a scientist and a journalist and
Mark Singer's plastically surgery.
A minister and a nurse, and we're the freedom fighters that are going to take on the aliens. You kind of need a guy that knows what they're doing.
Or we're CIA who's there to kick ass.
I wonder if he also just maybe made a few white lies, like, I used to be a doctor. I used to be a military guy. Because he just has that just look. So I understand why he's on ER. I understand why he's in all these other military roles.
Whatever he says, you're just like, yes. Yes, you are. I believe you. I'm not going to fight you on it.
Michael, you might explode my brain. That's what I'm worried about.
Exactly.
Totally. Totally. Oh. Well, this has been a joy, you all. So I will let you plug it. Jimbo, you can go first. What is Film Rage raging about?
Just about everything. Well, mostly lately, we're raging about the fact that we're not getting any new content. Our whole month of January has been crap, so we're kind of not too happy with that.
You guys, I was listening in and it's just like, streaming options this month, Yeah.
And in cinema is also.
Yeah. There's a reason it's on Max and I'm not going to the theater. So.
Yep. Exactly.
How about you two? What is on the horizons for covering next?
Well, fortunately, all of our content already exists.
Right.
But we're just continuing going through the catalog, talking about each episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000 or Riff Tracks or Cinematic Titanic that we decide to talk about.
And then you'll do some lists like top 10 Mike moments, top 10 Joel moments or something like that.
I think this summer we're going to do some guest spots because we're doing the Gamera movies.
Oh,
yeah.
Sort of a kaiju with a friend.
Yeah.
We did an episode of that where we were just like, what are the other awesome roles that Mike Nelson played? And we might do it with some of the others. It's like, what are the other funny roles? And it doesn't even have to be just that. Like if we were to cover Trace Bayou, obviously we would mention, some of his Adult Swim shows and, you know, some of the same deal with the other guys. This is like,
what was his video game? The Star.
Oh, Dark Star. Where
yeah,
they
Dark
had
Star.
The guy from Space Hunter TV show on. And yeah. Such an awesome gun and suit he's wearing. Yeah.
Nice.
What's our next episode?
Our next episode is The Leech Woman.
Okay. Ooh, oh, yes. So we do have a theme this month. We did Attack of the Killer Leeches or Giant Leeches, sorry.
Yeah, so you guys might even do top 10 Cinematic Titanic or Riff Tracks episodes.
Top 10 Cinematic Titanic. Well, we got to cut two out.
There you go. Oh, man. Yeah, they tried doing that on CT again, and they almost got stopped again. I'm like, for real? It's a no-budget cult movie.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it don't.
Yeah.
We're fans, we're at the whims of whatever the studios do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It always comes down to business.
And who knows what Gizmoplex will be? We don't know.
It'll be Gremlinville.
Gizmo.
You think so?
No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, hopefully Gizmoplex is fun. Hopefully a lot of things are fun. I'm just glad that so many shows can keep continuing, even though they're almost 3 decades old. So
yeah.
Well, and we live in this amazing era of nostalgia.
Nostalgia, crowdfunding, people have been able to market it, and people are just as curious as to what new Blu-ray release is coming out as they are of what new streaming platform is being crafted and what content it will offer. So yeah, I mean, and you're always going to, I mean, there's something for everybody. You're always going to have thrift stores and even just free to sell markets and panels where people can find other lost goodies. So yeah, I mean, there's ways to navigate. It's just, it also takes a little bit of researching. So
yeah.
So speaking of nostalgia, Jim, you're a man of a certain age.
Yes.
Scanners, that opening scene.
Yes.
Tell me you can smell what that mall smells like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
Totally.
Totally. Oh, man.
Yep.
That weird mixture of new clothing, cigarette smoke, and popcorn.
It makes any Romero set mall smell better.
Yes.
Oh.
Romero's one of my favorite directors behind Cronenberg. So
he should have used Ironside as a general in one of his movies before he passed away, man. I'm telling you.
Oh, man.
It would have been great. Imagine him as
Rhodes.
Then he wouldn't
have had Tom Savini as the evil guy. So I don't know.
There you go. Oh, I could see that. Him yelling Chocolate Man and Dawn of the Dead, or even. Oh, now you mentioned Savini. What if he was Sex Machine in From Dusk Till Dawn? That'd be funny.
Nice. I don't know. You can't see anybody but Savini playing that.
From Day of the Dead? The head
zombie? Bub?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah, Rhodes would have been great. But yeah, that would have been good too. Yeah,
he could have played Rhodes. Yeah.
Consider the gravitas of... All you're giving me is a mouthful of Greek salad.
Yeah, exactly.
Why do you stop wasting my fucking time?
What's the other line? You're jerking me off.
You're right. That's part of the giant speech he gives. But I mean, just imagine his final moments where his insides are just being torn apart. Yeah, and just, yeah. You know, he would have that face just down to a T, just like, oh, 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 man.
This podcast could last 20 hours.
I don't want to do that to you.
Which leads to another movie.
We've done enough recasting, like, I just promise. All right,
let's recast Michael Ironside in Star Wars.
Follow me on this one. Snake Moan with Michael Ironside.
Yes.
Yes.
Christina Ricci character.
Because you... Yeah, do some change-ups, but
casting.
I could see him totally playing a trombone or saxophone, but yeah, I mean, hell, I could see him as Darth Vader in Star Wars, and he would be en masse. He'd be just like a half-cyborg guy.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Completely not Michael Ironside related, but in Turbo Kid, that's part of one of the things I really liked was the weird buzzsaw dude.
Yeah.
Gal,
oh, totally. Like,
that they never unmasked them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was totally playing up a lot of those cyberpunk and space epic type movies. And
like you're waiting for that mask to come off and see something telling or revealing. And nope, just doesn't happen.
Nope.
Yeah.
It left me still excited because I was like, I didn't want the surprise. I wanted to imagine what it looks like.
What's in the mask?
Yeah, concept.
Oh, man. And how cool. I mean, when's the last actor you can think of who was really happy to be in a homage film, you know, that was its own cool entity too, you know, and
that wasn't made by the Wayans brothers.
Or just any other comedian making a sequel to a popular sci-fi or horror franchise that feels like a fan film, you know. Did Turbo Kid 2 finally come out? I think. I thought they were doing a sequel. So.
Oh, I hope they do.
Unless I'm mistaken for some other... I mean, there's sequels to all kinds of spoofs nowadays.
Turbo Kid 2, it's in making, but it's not...
I mean, so then again, so is Black Dynamite. So, I don't know. There's time for it.
I am a little sad he's not in Top Gun 2, but he explains very often why he's not.
In sequels,
is it going to be terrible? Is that why?
No, apparently he and Bruckheimer...
They just don't get along.
They don't get along.
I didn't know that. That's wild.
I'm better than your production.
True that, Jeff. True that.
True that.
Oh, that's great. That is great. Okay, well, thank you all for so much. This is a fun, just like you say, nostalgia dive and just recap of nothing but love. So thank you all for being here, and welcome back anytime.
Well, thank you.
All right. Love to come back.
You know it. And again, just wash your hands. Mask up.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight.
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin cough, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. Oh, I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that. Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this movie.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist. Watching this film again, I had all of this like little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll yeah, popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped from watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was.
How
be a
did
rough
you watch
movie.
This shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey everybody, I'm Corey
and I'm Zach. And we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
Greetings, friends. My name is Dean Legiro, and I'm the host of the 3324 Podcast. I invite you to join me and my lifelong friend Eric Kuber to come with us as we discuss the music and movies that shaped our life. Each week, we'll pick an album or film that we really connect to, and not only give you some great info and trivia, but also discuss, debate, and celebrate what it means to us and the journey it took us on. We also look forward to hearing from you and giving us some of your picks for us to check out and discuss. I think it'll be a really fun experience, so come along with us for the ride. You can find us on your favorite podcast provider, and at 3324.buzzsprout.com. Thanks for your time, and welcome to the 3324 family.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a cup of brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones, too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh, yeah.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With a one-last plot hole's a gratuitous movie. It's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.